we have to do more neutral site ministry, because what happens is, if we don't do more neutral site ministry, then we're going to raise students who are codependent on the church, and they never serve God in their context. Because what they do is they go to church to serve God. They don't go to church serving God. So they show up at the youth group to serve God. Then they leave him there, and they walk back to their campus or their school or their home, and it means nothing because the youth ministry hasn't been in their setting either.
Helping student ministry leaders grow themselves, their students, and their community in Christ. This is First Priority. Now, here are your hosts, Steve Cherico and Brad Skelling.
Well, welcome to another First Priority podcast. I am so glad you're here. I am Brad Skelling. I am here with my friend, Steve Cherico. Steve, how are you doing today?
Man, I'm good. What's up, Mr. Brad? How are you doing?
It is a beautiful day in Nash, Vegas, and I'm loving every minute of it.
I can't believe they keep hiding you in that recording booth when you could be outside hanging out.
Who said I'm in a recording booth? I'm sitting down on Broadway right now. The place is empty. Let's go.
Nobody believes you, dude. Nobody believes you. So, bro, we're jumping into a cool conversation today with our mutual friend, Jeff Grinnell.
Yes, I'm excited to have Jeff back on our podcast for the second time. I'm even more excited to have him at our fall conference this fall to rub shoulders again with all of our First Priority leadership. But you and Jeff have a really good conversation today.
We do, man. Let's jump in, and then we'll chat it up when it's over.
Sounds good.
Well, friends, we are once again super excited to have our friend Jeff Grinnell on the podcast vidcast for First Priority this week. Jeff, how you doing?
Fantastic. Looking forward to this. I love First Priority. I'm a huge fan.
Man, it's only been a few months since we saw you. Thanks for joining us for a day and a half at the National Conference. That was a big deal. A lot of our guys really felt a strong connection to you. So thanks for breathing into them. You know, we did this just under a year ago on the podcast. And so I thought I'd just ask you to give us a little bit of an update. Tell us where you've been, how your grown kids are. Just catch us up a little bit, man.
Yeah. The First Priority family is just that to me. I love the emphasis. I love the campus access. I love the ideas, the creativity, the diversity. I like the diversity that exists there. And so it's an honor. I'm looking forward to being with you guys in the fall. Cannot wait for that. And see what God has planned for our training there. As far as me, you know, this pandemic kind of shut all of us down. And what I've been trying to do lately is just produce a ton of content. And, you know, like these things, I did two of these yesterday. I have one tomorrow, one Friday. And just get content out to leaders because, you know, basically, you know, the ministry revolved around travel before and being in different settings. And now that, you know, all that's locked down, it's easy to produce content. It just takes time. You know, I had 4 months canceled of meetings. So, you know, 9 camps, Steve, and 7 of those were canceled. A couple of those are doing online stuff. So, but I still have 2 that I'm doing. So that just changed the whole summer. So now, like you and everyone else, it's all content driven and trying to reach students online. So that's where we're at. Kids are doing great. One in LA with 3 grand boys, one in New York with 1 grand boy. And then my youngest is with me right now, just got back from Hillsong. They had to shut the college down in Sydney also and send all the kids globally home. So he's with me now, but going to LA in about 2 weeks to start there at the Hillsong LA there. So
that's good. Well, really, again, grateful for the update, grateful for your time and investment, not just in
for sure,
and not just in our crew, but just the youth ministry world whatsoever, or across the board, excuse me. So let's talk for a minute about 2020 pre-pandemic, okay? So we're a couple months in. What were you seeing the Lord do? What were you hearing from him in terms of where the church was headed when it came to campus ministry in general? You know, youth ministers involved in schools. What were you seeing? What were you hearing?
You know, one of the encouraging things, let me give you two, a positive and a negative. One of the encouraging things was volunteer leaders in youth ministries who were making a effort to be on campus. Mm-hmm. You know this as well as I do. Just because a church has a full-time or, you know, even a part-time youth pastor, youth leader that's paid or, you know, working solely for the church, doesn't mean they're on campus.
Yeah.
I've found, and this would be anecdotal, this is not necessarily data, but in my personal experience, which is pretty exhaustive in small, medium, and large churches, in urban, suburban, and rural settings, I'm in all of those, okay? I've found that, man, not half of youth pastors are on campus. I'm telling you, because I talk to them. And what I do, it's like, well, you know, once in a while, or yeah, I go to a game, but there's very little campus access at that paid staff. But what I'm finding is that a lot of volunteer leaders are getting involved in the community, getting involved in sports, going by and serving at lunch, you know, or whatever they can do to have a presence on campus. Mm. That is encouraging. You wouldn't think it would. You would think that those numbers would be the opposite, but man, I don't know if the full-time, you know, guy or gal is sucked into the system in the church, you know, enjoying cafe visits for a long time and not getting out, you know. Yeah. I don't know, man, but it can be intimidating. We all know that it can be intimidating. So to me, that would be the positive. That volunteer leaders, you know, and teams are, you know, are getting involved with campus. The negative would be, you know, the opposite of that, that we are not having enough of our professionals, you know, in youth ministry that do this for life vocationally, with a burden for campus ministry. I get asked a ton of questions all the time. How can I get on campus more? And I'm like, hold it, dude, you're 28 and you're not on campus? I'm 50. I'm 58 almost. And I'm on campus as much as I can be, you know, Reggie Dabbs. Many of you know Reggie Dabbs and what he does on a regular basis. He and I talked yesterday and it's driving him crazy because, you know, it looks like their assemblies in the fall are all going to be canceled that he has scheduled already. Because everything's just different in the public school now, you know. And so now we have to be a little more creative with it. So I would say those would be the two things. And I know they sound really general, but that's what comes to my mind. There is this lack of effort. And then there is this, you know, plan, the strategic plan to reach the campus. But it's almost flipped, Steve, from who you would think would be accessing campus and who would not.
Yeah. Well, and you know this because you spend time with our leaders. The reality is that our leadership core, the directors, the coordinators, those who are championing on volunteer level for First Priority, they face that every day as they go out and have a conversation with the local church.
Right.
So let's be broad a minute. Let's be broad and talk about the local church. Where do you feel like that trickle down comes from or doesn't come from when it comes to student ministers, youth pastors, and even lay leaders, you know, your part-timers, that don't find a burden. They're not burdened for the student on the campus. What's our why? Why are they there?
Yeah, to me, the parachurch is the leader, obviously, in this. And it starts there. We can talk about a burden and a vision to reach the lost. We need to talk about apologetics and youth ministry. That's the larger discussion.
Okay.
Okay. And we could go there. Maybe we have seen a season of youth pastors who are under 30, whose youth pastors themselves were not on campus the last 10 years, 15 years. So, you know what I mean? So these kids who were in high school, who are now youth pastors, you know, 10 years ago, they were in high school. They didn't have a model because this isn't new. Okay. This isn't new. They didn't have a model of a youth ministry on campus. They had a model of a youth ministry doing small group, having a blast playing gaga ball, playing nine square, all that stuff. But they didn't see their youth leader on campus. They didn't pray for their campus at the beginning of every message. My students heard me at the beginning of every message when I was a youth pastor. Highlight a school, we'd pray for that school. Or I would announce at the end of the youth service, hey, Friday night, there's a big game between Central and Catholic. We're going to be there. The youth leaders will also be over at Kentwood and Fruitport. You know, so we had all of these different announcements. Our kids knew that was, I think we've raised a generation of youth leaders that didn't see it in their youth ministry. So I think that's part of it. The loss of an apologetic in the youth leader himself or herself who doesn't have a passion for it. Maybe a third one is it's intimidating. It's intimidating to get on campus if you haven't been there, you know, et cetera. It's closed campuses. I mean, I've never, and I know you feel the same way. There's no such thing as a closed campus. I've heard the stories of, well, you know, the youth pastor who was there before us got up on the table and started preaching and now we can't go. Okay, fine. You can't go you can't go on campus, but there's so many ways that number one, you can get on campus because you train campus missionaries who are your students who have to go to campus. Yeah. It's so that just having that burden, counseling, coaching, buying a season sports pass, right? And meeting the principal at the football game or at the basketball, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't know. I think that part of it is we've raised a generation of youth pastors who didn't see their youth leaders on campus. They don't have a passion, apologetic for the campus. The campus is intimidating. They have excuses. You know, I think that's all part of it. The question to me, Steve, it gets down into the heart, not the methodology of it and the practice of it.
It's good.
Fair?
No, it's very good. And again, I think for those who are our audience, they would all agree and have very much the same take of the last 15 to 20 years as you would. That does lead us to the reality that we're now thinking about post-pandemic realities. And you brought up Reggie's reality with assemblies, and we've got Scott in Mississippi that's dealing with the same thing with his athletic things that he does. And so right. As you begin to talk to these assembly guys, you know, we're realizing we're going to have to do things differently. So what you're a trainer with youthology, what are you saying? Or what are you saying yet? Because maybe you're still thinking it through. But what are you thinking about in terms of how you're going to coach these youth ministers, youth networks? How are you going to coach them to be smart enough to actually train campus ministers? And let me lay a groundwork.
Yeah, go.
Because I think the day, this is me being opinionated, I think the day of saying here is the strategy to share the gospel, right? I think that day is becoming, we're starting to turn the ship a little bit, and it's starting to become, here's the strategy for you to have a burden for your campus. In other words, we used to teach technique, and now we're trying to help students and youth pastors understand, no, this is about a heart and understanding of what the gospel's done in your own life and moving that on. So with that groundwork, how are you beginning to talk to or preparing to talk to these groups that you coach?
Good. So again, man, so much of what I like to talk about as a coach, a youth pastor's coach, youth leader's coach, is theory, is theoretical. We got to get to the practice, but we never get to the practice if you can't deal with the why. This question you're asking. So I'm going to do a shameless plug for the book.
No problem at all. Do it.
My youth ministry book came out in the past 6 months, and I do a whole chapter on this question, on what I call neutral site ministry, or what many have called ministry context, the context of the teenager. Okay. If we are not in the context of the teenager, then they're not going to come and visit us, because it's almost like youth pastors, youth leaders are standing at the door of the youth ministry saying, come, we've got this great program for you, right? But they never step foot on the campus. So they never go home where the students are home. they don't go to their workplace, you know, they're not in their world, the mall with them, the skate park, you know, what the game. So to me, we have to do more neutral site ministry, because what happens is, if we don't do more neutral site ministry, okay, this is the why, then we're going to raise students who are codependent on the church, and they never serve God in their context. Yeah. Because what they do is they go to church to serve God.
Yep.
They don't go to church serving God. You know what I mean? So they show up at the youth group to serve God, then they leave him there, and they walk back to their campus or their school or their home, and it means nothing because the youth ministry hasn't been in their setting either. So I want to read this real quick.
Yeah.
While speaking with, I don't know if you've heard of Live Dead, Dick Brogdon and Live Dead. It's an elite missionary ministry. While speaking with Dick Brogdon one morning on a short flight from Springfield, Missouri to Chicago, Illinois, we were talking about youth ministry. Dick and his wife, Jen, and two boys, Luke and Zach, founded the global Live Dead missionary movement. Jen was also in my youth group and was my admin for several years, 25 years ago. So we had been close for for years. On this short flight, Dick said something to me. He said, if a missionary showed up in America, okay, this is right out of the book, a missionary would ask youth pastors, why are you not on campus? Now think about that from a missionary's perspective. Dick and Jen and Live Dead are in the context of their mission's target, okay? I can't say even where he's at right now, man. It's just, And we're talking, and he's like, what do you see as one of the problems? And I say, man, campus ministry, which is, I can't get these leaders on campus, you know, regularly. And he said, if a missionary showed up to America, they would scratch their head and say, why in the world are you not on campus? You know, what are your excuses? So I think we have to teach and we have to train neutral site ministry, not just church campus. And we have to learn how to take that neutral site ministry and teach our students how to serve God in the context of their world.
That's good. Good.
Got that.
I do. And I love that. And so, you know, as you're talking, it reminds me of a phrase that I have used as long as I've been
breaks
around,
me,
youth,
man.
Around youth ministry, which is titles are given, but respect is earned. And so I think you can layer that all the way through. And here's what I mean by that. A youth pastor can be given the title of youth pastor, but unless they enter into a student's world, there's no chance they ever actually become their youth pastor, right? They're just the guy at the church that's called the youth minister. So let's go farther with that, right? You can walk on to any site you want to. You call it neutral site, that's fine. You can walk into a school, you can walk into a ball team, whatever. And the first time you show up to meet the kid, right? The kid's like, that youth guy is here. But when you begin to invest and take time at where they are, then it's, hey, my youth guy's here. Or, hey, you need to have a conversation with this guy too, because you wouldn't believe. And all of a sudden, that respect layer is earned. And I think, to me, that is where some of the missing element is that what you are being asked of to show up to these places can be intimidating. It can be hard, right? I have to give up things in order to do it. So I've got to give up lifespan in order to do it. And yet, it's where you actually meet the relationship factor that grows the respect between you and a student. And
yeah, listen, here's a story. Sorry, Steve.
Nope.
It's kind of like the news and all the delays, right? Watching the news and they're like talking.
Oh, yeah.
Here's a story. A youth pastor, lady, a girl, and she has been wanting to get on campus. So we had a conversation about a year ago. And she came up with this idea. And this is not new. This is totally not new. But what she did is she decided to contact the school, the large high school where she's at as a youth leader, and tell them, hey, I want to come in and I want to be a part of your lunch staff. You don't have to pay me. And so she works this out. They had to pay her $1 just because of legal issues. So they pay her $1 to come in, and her and one of her other youth leaders, another guy, come in and serve and save, not only save the school money, okay, because they're serving at this high school, all three lunches, hair net on, and they wear like their youth ministry logo and merch and stuff, you know. And they're not only saving the school money, but here are 900 kids who come through three lunches and get to see this girl and this other youth leader smiling at them as they hand them tater tots or whatever, yeah, right?
Exactly.
And I'm telling you, it's those kind of ideas and that kind of creativity. The practical side, that's fantastic, but she wasn't going to forget all of our practical ideas if someone doesn't have that why, if they don't have that theoretical, deep down inside of them, I want to do this. And so I listen, if the youth pastor or youth, if the youth leader wants to do this, we have ideas. They can go to the first priority site. We have ideas on how to start a club, you know, how to start. What do we call them for at first priority?
FP clubs. Yep.
Yeah. Or huddles. Yeah. With FCA or whatever that is.
Yep.
We can show you how to start one. Okay. But you have to have that it factor, that desire. So that's where I think that neutral site and that context understanding, wow, I'm a missionary. I'm actually a missionary. So.
Yeah. Which I think for our directors who are our main audience in this and then for their main leaders, you know, you think about a youth pastor who is already burdened for the campus and he is most likely spending time with other youth pastors, just like people who are in sales, spend time with other salespeople because they want to learn from each other. You know, it's good to have that conversation because nobody knows what it's like to be that person except those that know who do it. So I think one of the questions that continue to arise for us is, all right, how do I approach a youth minister and help them with that burden? And I know that nobody gives them the burden but God. I hear that, right? But how do I help somebody understand? And story is obviously the first place we all go. But I do think there's got to be some ways that we communicate that, right? We've got to be able to equip, at least on my end, got to be able to equip these champions who are youth pastors that are already telling the story about being on campus and these charter leaders. Hey, these are ways that you can look at somebody who says, man, I already spend 45 hours a week in the church and that's really all I got, right? I don't have any more. Just to help them find that burden.
Yeah.
So you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, you know what I would do first. So let's not just go to story. Let's get practice on this. What I would do first is to get that youth leader with students to sit down with them. So if I'm the leader in the area, or if I'm coming in like I do and coach teams, I'm gonna pull together like I did. I just did this in Fresno, California, right? Literally. The day of the lockdown in Fresno, I am leaving. My ticket was out and this had hit and we had been, okay, should I go there or not? The lockdown started nationally about 2 days before that, but we just kept it and we made the group smaller than where I was coaching. It was a multiple staff youth ministry team. But what we did on the last meeting is I brought in 8 to 10 students, okay? And I sat them down and I talked to them with this youth staff so that they could hear directly from the students, you know, how are my students serving God on campus? Because if I can help a youth leader see the committed students who are on campus that are serving God, then they can show up and sit at their table at lunch if they get a chance, or go to the student section and sit by their students and feel safe. Okay, because they have this contact relationship with their students. And I think that's the first thing, to be with students, because then if you're comfortable with your students at the church, then you'll be comfortable with your students at, you know, in their world. So that's the first thing. Second, what I have tried to do is to take another youth leader who is doing this well, and get them with the youth leaders in their area who are struggling with this. So what I would do is take this youth pastor girl that I just told you about, and if I'm ever in that area again, which I will be doing a youth leaders conference, I'm going to stand her up and say, "Hey, you know, Jules, tell me, how did you get on? Would you walk us through what you did? What was your idea?" because if she can share in front of a bunch of other youth pastors at this youth pastors conference, in front of all of them, I guarantee you the ones that aren't doing anything, I'm gonna be like, okay, sure, that's a great idea. Maybe I could do that. So that would be two ways. Sit them with students who are there are students who are maybe, you know, really solid believers, and have them talk that through. What is it like to be on campus? Do you go to FCA? Are you involved in First Priority? When they can sit with students who are already serving God where they want to be, that can encourage them and maybe be the avenue. And then second, with youth leaders who are already doing it well, I think we have to match those youth leaders up with youth leaders who are struggling with campus access.
That's good. Yeah, and in post-pandemic life, I think all of us are aware of the reality that this fall is not going to look like any fall we've had before. And so one of the things you've just touched on is we're going to have to really lean in heavily on student leaders.
Correct.
Who do see themselves as campus missionaries. Because it's very likely that whether it's myself as a local nonprofit champion or whether it's a youth pastor of the local Baptist church, right, that's just going and serving because they want to, neither one of us are probably going to be allowed on campus this fall. It's very likely that those doors are going to be shut.
For sure.
And so thinking clearly and soon, hey, how do we make sure that we do what you just said, which is how do we make sure we match up youth ministers that are encouraging one another, and how do we get student leaders to take that next step up in leadership?
Yeah, so I think to add to those two that I shared, being with students, being with student leaders, I think you gave a third one right here. Here's another way. We have to sit down with parachurch leaders and church leaders. I had a relationship with parachurch leaders in both of the settings where I was a youth pastor, in the local church setting, that it was strong. I had parachurch leaders who were on my youth leadership team.
Yep.
Okay. And I say to youth pastors all the time, hey, who are the First Priority leaders? Who are the Youth for Christ leaders? Who are there was a baseball coach that was one of my youth leaders who was involved in FCA. He was one of the best youth leaders I had because he connected me to all of the other huddle groups, so that when we did that Fields of Faith thing, that they, you know, oh, that's, man, I already knew all these youth pastors. And it was mostly because of my parachurch relationship. So I think that's got to be stronger. Okay. Fourth, you cannot have a mono strategy to reach the campus, okay? Usually our mono strategy is, let's get involved in the parachurch leader, the number three area. Let's get involved there and support it and whatever. Listen, you got to have more strategies than that. And I think the first one is training campus missionaries. Hmm. You know, I mentioned it a few minutes ago. If every youth leader who was intimidated by the campus, who didn't want to go to the campus, would just raise up disciples who could reach the campus, then I think it would be easier, because now that access may be tougher in the fall and classrooms are going to look different and lunch is not going to be like, we're not going to have 500 kids in a lunch in a school anymore. They're going to have lunch in their classrooms probably. I mean, think about that. Or they're going to have three different lunchrooms, you know, one in the gym, I don't know, whatever. Everything's going to change. So what a great opportunity to raise our students to be disciples, to be campus missionaries, and to take August when we get back into youth ministry, if we do, or to do that now, to take time before they get back into campus and train them how, in apologetics, how to share their faith, train them how to invite their friends to their youth ministry group, train them how to take transitional statements when a kid says, man, I had a terrible weekend. How to take that into, man, I had a great weekend, right? Transitional statements as campus missionaries.
Yeah.
I have a page that has like 30 ways to do that, from happy birthday greetings, et cetera, to wearing your merch. There's so many ways to get people talking about that. And I think what has to happen is youth pastors who maybe are timid and don't want to be on campus, he or she can train campus missionaries, and it's a way to get their youth ministry on campus, you know, especially with the tighter, you know, how much tighter campus is going to be now. So, yeah.
And I appreciate your view as we begin to land this thing. I think you've just spoken into what we are thinking about in Nashville and running First Priority of Greater Nashville. But I would speak on behalf of the other 40 charters that are thinking as well in their cities, right? I think you've spoken to the fact that we've all said when we're around roundtables, man, I just can't train students one way. Like, I can't just train the youth pastors, then train the students. And I think that's going to be amplified this fall. We're going to have to train students through Zoom. We're going to have to send things to their youth pastor. We're going to have to gather them in groups of three. And like, we're going to work harder than we've ever worked before. But the fruit, in my opinion, is going to bear itself in more ways than ever before. And so,
hey, Steve, here's an idea with that. Let me just, I know we're locking this down, but here's an idea of what you just said. I think this multi-strategy versus a mono-strategy could really happen if youth leaders would just change language. It doesn't even have to be like a big teaching or to bring in a parachurch leader. Change your language by saying something at the beginning of every one of your messages. Hey, today, this week, we are praying for, right? And just mention the high school or the middle school.
Yeah.
Or in your messaging, help the burden of your youth ministry by just saying at the end of your message, we're all going to this football game or that baseball game or the track dual meet with six schools on Saturday.
That's right.
Dude, I can see that by changing language. It's language.
Well, so, Danny Chambers says language changes culture. And so if our intentionality in language changes this fall, this summer, then culture begins to change. And that's what, I mean, that's the whole reason we do what we do, right? Is to help students change the culture on campus. So, man, that's really good.
Such a Chambers fan, big time Chambers. I think if I saw him, I've never met Danny, I would be like.
He's a Nashville boy.
I love him. He's traveling
these days. That's hilarious.
I follow him around, man. I'm a fan.
That's hilarious. Well, so, you know, here it is, man. You've got a group of 40 guys that are staring at you that have heard you kind of dance around and land everything. What's one final word that you want to say to that group of guys and gals as they kind of make their way back into preparing for next fall?
Value. I know it's been 10 weeks, 12 weeks or so. Value this time with your family, even if it's only another week or two or 3 weeks, whatever's left. Man, dig in to the family. Ask the hard questions with your kids. Look at your spouse in the eye every day. Man, you know my story. My wife passed away 4 years ago. She would be kicking me out of the house right now. She'd be like, honey, could you go for some more? We need more cheese. You know, would you go for another walk? You're bothering me. So, I wish I could bother my wife again. So I would just say to all your leaders, man, Don't let these hours pass by. Sit down with your spouse. Take a walk with your spouse. Do a project with your spouse. Talk to your kids, man. Get to know your kids again. My son, as I said, this came back from Hillsong's Leadership College. And so he's been with me for a few times. And we sat down and put together like some mini sermons that he's doing and had those discussions. I don't want this time to pass without me saying we took some extra conversation and got to know him better. I keep, you know, he's not dating right now. And so I'll put this out there. I was like, hey, I think I said this a couple of days ago. I cannot wait to meet your wife. He's like, I got to date someone first, you know. So just those kind of conversations, man, right now are so valuable for your leaders.
It's good.
Well, we may not get this again, Steve.
You're right. In our lifetime of the way that we do what we do and what we've been called to, you're right. We may not get this pause again. That's a good word. Well, man, I really appreciate the minutes today. I really appreciate the wisdom. You're not 58. That's a lie. I don't buy it. And may I look 58 like that as well. in another 23 years.
Well, I've learned this. If you reinvent yourself in youth ministry, you don't have to take a demotion and become a lead pastor. Yeah. If you reinvent yourself in youth ministry and spend a lot of time with teenagers, it's a great anti-aging process.
That's great. That's great, man. Jeff, yeah. Just one more time, hold the book up, let them see the book, and tell them where they can catch
Please.
Up with you.
And you know what? Perfect timing, because I just put it on sale through tomorrow to cost. Like, literally, it's $6. I can't put it any lower. So yeah. On Amazon, please buy them for your leaders, man. I want this out. This doesn't sell well with me not traveling. Yeah. And there's so much timely wisdom in here. And then, so it's on Amazon, Youthology, The Study of Youth. Then I have the other one coming out, Youth and Sexuality, in the fall. I am so excited about this. I'm doing the editing now. The editing process is going on right now. And it's going to be a game changer on sexuality and youth.
YTHOLOGY.com. Is that correct? Sweet.
Thank you. Perfect.
You're the man. Thanks for the time.
Love you, Steve.
Love you, buddy. Well, Brad, as you mentioned, that conversation was extremely thick and extremely helpful for those of us who are nose deep in the world of youth ministry right now.
I agree. For me, it brought a healthy perspective. He shared some common first priority, you know, struggles, I guess, if you will, some things, you know, just dealing with the campus and youth ministry, things of that nature. But I loved his just fresh perspective from an outsider's point of view that he brought to the table for us just to consider as we talk student ministry.
Me too. One of the interesting moments in that conversation, Brad, was just realizing what moment we are in history and how easily it could be for all of us to get lost in the things going on around us and miss out on what the Lord has called us to. And it's not that we ignore those things around us. They should take precedent. We should be aware of them, but it can't take away from the conversation that we need to be having right now. It needs to salt. It needs to help that conversation. So listening to Jeff, just as you said, really bring us back to the main things and hit some really key points of first priority in campus ministry and youth ministry. It was just very helpful to have an outside voice really bring that to the forefront and help us navigate that.
I agree. And as I said in the intro to this podcast, I'm really excited to have him at our fall conference this October 12 to 14 here in Nashville, Tennessee. He's just going to continue to help us dive deep, help us stay focused, and just care for our souls in the midst of it all.
Yep. And if you haven't checked out Jeff's stuff on Youthology, I highly, highly recommend it. It's a good secondary resource as you leave this podcast.
It's good stuff. Well, thanks for doing that interview again this week. You're on a roll with the interviews going solo. I appreciate you and all the work you're putting into it.
Man, my pleasure. That's a wrap for another week, man.
Have a good week.
We'll see you next week.
Later.